It was just a short time ago that we had a program on vaccinations and measles and whether there was a problem in our region. And today, we have an update. Welcome to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Before we begin, I know that many who are listening have strong opinions on the issue of vaccinations. We would like to read your comments on the air during this program. If you send them to us now, it will give us time to have our guests address them in the next hour. The way to reach us is by email. We're at tfs@wshu.org or on Twitter. You can find us at FullStoryWSHU. The issue of vaccinations and the measles really became a story in our listening area because of what is taking place in New York City. So the question we had was, what's the status for Long Island and Connecticut? We received some answers during our last program, but then something happened just a short time ago in Connecticut that made us realize that we should revisit the issue. So once again, we're calling upon Mick Baldick, epidemiologist, vaccine coordinator for the Connecticut Immunization Program. Hi, Mick. How are you?
I'm doing well, Ron. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Thank you. Thanks for coming back on. So the report came out the other week. It was from the Department of Health. What did it say?
Well, it shows that we do have high levels. We continue to maintain high levels of immunization coverage in schools. We're at 96.5% for measles, mumps, rubella in kindergarten, but we also do show pockets of unimmunized and underimmunized children in those school settings. And so, you know, that is concerning to us. The levels have gone down from previous years, and it also shows a steady increase in the religious exemptions through the years, and that also is of a concern to us.
Mick, were you surprised by the findings? It appeared to take many state officials off guard.
I wouldn't say surprised, because we've seen a trend towards some lower rates over the last couple of years, and we've seen that not only in Connecticut, but we've seen it nationwide as well. And so it's something that we've been keeping an eye on, and as I mentioned, it's happened nationwide as well. So it seems to be a growing trend, Ron, and so I can't say that we're really surprised by it.
So, Mick, is this for, you mentioned, religious reasons, but also could it be for medical, fear of big pharma, fear of big government, check D, E, all of the above?
Well, that's a great question. There are two exemptions in Connecticut. There's medical and there's religious. And so the medical exemptions, those have remained pretty steady through the years. And so those rates really haven't changed that much. It's the religious exemptions that have gone up. And in Connecticut, there is no litmus test. So, by law, we can't ask why someone is claiming a religious exemption. So we don't know why exactly people are claiming religious exemptions. We can only theorize why people are claiming religious exemptions. And, you know, people may have their own reasons why. It may be a true religious reason why they don't want to get their child vaccinated, or it may be a personal belief. It may be that they don't believe in the value of the vaccines. It may be that they heard that the vaccines aren't effective, or that, you know, they go on the internet and there's a lot of misinformation about vaccines. And so there could be a whole host of reasons, but because there's really no litmus test for why they're choosing a religious exemption, we really don't have strong data on that.
Mick, I honestly don't know if you're the guy to talk about this, but I'm going to read the first line from a report from the CT Mirror the other day. And it says, legislative leaders are preparing to unveil their plans for removing the state's religious exemption on mandatory vaccines. Do you have an opinion on this? I mean, obviously, I think you have beliefs, but do you think it should be removed?
Well, that's really an issue for the legislature to decide, Ron. Our position is that the more people that are vaccinated, the more people that are protected. But that removal of a religious exemption really lays with the folks in the legislature, and they have to make that decision.
Okay, so why certain schools? Why certain areas? Why certain schools? What have you learned?
Well, that's a great question. You know, we don't know why certain schools, why certain areas, but, you know, it gives us, you know, the release of this data is helpful because it will allow parents to be able to see exactly where those pockets of under-immunized kids are, especially parents that have medically fragile children. It allows transparency of the data because we were one of the few states in New England that didn't post this data, and so now moving forward each year, we have a baseline, and so moving forward each year, we're going to be able to have that baseline, and each year you'll be able to see how each school hopefully improves each year, and it'll allow parents to be able to see hopefully that improvement in their school year to year. And, you know, for parents that have medically frail children, it will allow that data and hopefully, you know, allow them to be able to see how well their school is doing in protecting each child.
I anticipate that we're going to get a number of emails and tweets today from our program, and we already have one. And Mick, I'm going to read it to you. One listener tweets, "Do you plan on having anyone on who happens to be anti-vaccine? I mean, folks who have conducted or claim to have conducted in-depth research on the topic. If not, then we really aren't getting the full story, are we?" Mick, would you say that you have conducted in-depth research on this topic?
Me personally, no. But vaccines have been studied by the manufacturers, by CDC. Vaccines are tested over and over again. They're tested pre-licensure and they're tested post-licensure. They're tested by the manufacturers and they're tested by the FDA. And these vaccines are safe and they are effective. And I know, you know, the folks that are, whether they want to call themselves anti-vaxxers or they want to call themselves pro-vaccine safety, they are not going to believe that. And they have their beliefs and they're firm in their beliefs, and that's fine. But vaccines are safe and they are effective and they are well tested. And the best way for people to protect themselves against these diseases is to be vaccinated. And there's no doubt of that. There, you know, the science is there.
Mick, right after the report came out the other week, we heard from a number of state officials, including the state Senate president, from Governor Lamont. And from what I was hearing and reading from them, it almost sounded like a public health crisis at this point. Is it a public health crisis?
Well, I think everyone has their opinion on it. You know, fortunately, we only have 3 cases of measles so far. And I think when people look at the data, it is of concern because we don't want to have these pockets of unimmunized and underimmunized children because it does show that we have the potential for outbreaks to occur. And as we discussed a few weeks ago, we have seen what happens when you have vulnerable populations. We've seen what's happened in New York City. We've seen what's happened in other parts of the country. And if we look at New York City specifically, they've been dealing with this measles problem for 8 months now. And they have an ongoing measles transmission problem where they've had case after case after case, and they still don't have it under control. So they've been dealing with it for 8 months, and they're still taking extreme measures to try and bring it under control, and they're still having problems doing that. We don't want it to get to that point in time. We only have 3 cases. I think the legislature and the governor, when they look at the numbers, they want to make sure we don't have similar problems that New York City is having and New York State is having.
If I can expand on this segment, if I'm a parent with a young child, do I need to be worried, especially with travel season and camps coming up?
Well, if your child is vaccinated, then no, because 2 doses of vaccine is 2 doses of MMR vaccine is 97% effective. So I think, again, the message is that if your child is fully vaccinated, then you've done everything you can to protect your child. And the vaccine is highly effective and it is very safe. And so the problem starts when you have these pockets of unimmunized or under-immunized individuals. And so if we take the New York City situation, with the measles, that started when people traveled overseas. And when you look specifically at what's happening in other parts of the country and other parts of the world, people are traveling and they're unvaccinated and they're going to other parts of the world where they're having large-scale outbreaks, and they're bringing it back into the United States and they're spreading it to people who are unvaccinated here. And measles is highly contagious, and it doesn't take much for you to have a large-scale outbreak. And that's what's happened in New York City. That's what's happened in other parts of the country, like in Michigan. So what happened in New York City was you had an unvaccinated infant that, you know, went to Israel, where they're having huge problems with measles, brought it back to New York, and from there, here we are 8 months later, and they have over 400 cases of measles because you have a highly unvaccinated population, and it keeps on spreading. And from there, they actually had further spread because you had an individual who was unvaccinated in New York City who traveled to Michigan, and they had 40 cases from that individual who traveled to Michigan. And so you can see it doesn't take much for measles to have a large-scale outbreak. And, you know, if we talk about not only just the cases, but if we talk the financial impact of this, Washington State had 70 cases, Ron, and for them to try and bring that under control, which it finally looks like it is under control, between the staff and the testing that they did, the measles testing that they did in their laboratory, for those 70 cases and the staff hours, it cost them $1.6 million to bring that outbreak under control.
Mick, we have to take a short break. I know you're staying with us, and I appreciate it. Mick Baldick is epidemiologist, vaccine coordinator for the Connecticut Immunization Program. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. This is The Full Story on WSHU. It's The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak, and I invite you to join us on Twitter. We're at Full Story WSHU, or send us an email. If you want to get on today's program, please do it right now, tfs@wshu.org. Today, we're revisiting a topic we spoke about just a few weeks ago, vaccinations and the measles and the flu. The flu is still going around in our region. We're getting a number of views today. Mick Baldick, epidemiologist, vaccine coordinator for the Connecticut Immunization Program, is still with us. And we're also being joined by State Representative Jack Hennessy. Representative Hennessy is from Bridgeport, and he is the Deputy Speaker of the House.
Representative, hey, Ron. How you doing?
Representative, thanks for coming on. I'm well, sir. How are you?
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Representative, do you believe vaccines work, that they're effective and that they protect all of us?
Well, you know, I'm not a doctor or a scientist, but just in reading the information that I've gleaned, the gold standard for testing medical procedures is a double-blind study in which there's a benign placebo, a saline placebo, and I believe that just about all the vaccines that we're subjecting our children to have not received this gold standard testing. So there needs to be more study put into it. Unfortunately, there is no motivation for the pharmaceutical companies to pursue this, since they have complete immunity due to the Child Vaccine Protection Act passed in the 80s.
Representative, if you were a father with a young son or daughter right now, would you take your child to a doctor for vaccinations?
Well, you know, I think the question is, do you ask questions, or do you just blindly trust? You know, this unfortunately, the media has termed people who are seeking answers anti-vaxxers, and I think that, you know, really misrepresents the situation, where there are people that want to be, concerned parents that want to make the best decisions for their children. Unfortunately, we're in a situation where there's this fabricated crisis where there is none. There is no children in the state of Connecticut that has measles. There's a few adults, and there is this rush in the legislature to eliminate religious exemption, which, this being the Constitution state, I really am asking my fellow colleagues to hit the pause button and to, you know, let a bill go through the normal legislative process rather than not having it go through, the regular process, and let's have all the people come to the table and make a decision. You know, hopefully we can do that next year and not rush this thing through this year.
Representative, as I said, Mick Balduck is still on the line with us. And I don't know if you were able to hear any of the conversation that we had in the first segment of the program, but Mick was describing basically how measles, and what you said is true. There are three cases of measles in Connecticut right now, but Mick was saying the problem was it went from Israel to New York City to Michigan, and before you know it, there are hundreds of cases in New York City. There's 70 in Michigan, and it travels. Does that concern you?
So when I grew up in the 60s, measles was just considered a normal childhood illness along with chicken pox, and that it's, you know, I used naturopathic medicine, and, you know, under that kind of mindset, I mean, it's a completely different mindset from allopathic that looks at everything as a threat and basically orients itself towards alleviating symptoms rather than understanding the underlying issue. And with childhood illnesses, you know, my understanding is that it informs the immune system to respond to real threats, to create a run-through, a very important process of garnering the whole immune process, you know, using using all the various things. And when we have a vaccine injected, you know, considering that we're in injecting children that are born their first day with vitamin K and hepatitis B, which is a sexually transmitted drug, you know, I'm really concerned about these things.
Representative, I'm going to ask Mick to join us in just a second, but I have another question for you, because from what I read the other day, it appears, from what I read at least, and I'd like to think that the reporters got it right, that you basically have an issue with, if I can, Big Brother telling us what to do. Would that be correct, especially in regards to vaccines?
Well, thanks for the question, and thanks for bringing this up for the public to engage in. You know, we're the Constitution state. Our Constitution allows for a free public education, and removing religious exemption would be forcing children to not be able to go to public schools. And for that matter, maybe they can't go into stores or even go outside. So, you know, that's a problem. And something that's not mentioned is that there's so many vaccines that emit the pathogen. And if you go to a hospital that has immunosuppressed patients, there's a sign that says if you received these vaccinations within the last 30 days, please don't come in here because you're going to be a threat to these patients. So, you know, there is no consideration or discussion of the fact that, you know, vaccinated children also, it's called shedding, shed the virus in the first 30 days of them receiving vaccinations.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm just going to read from the press release that you put out the other day. And it reads, "We have a constitutional right to do what is right by our family members, and the federal government does not have the right to impinge its ideology onto us." But you, as a legislator, don't you pass a number of bills telling us what to do? And isn't this the right thing to do to protect all of us?
I believe that we need to protect the First Amendment right and the 14th Amendment right, especially where the Constitution states. If we're going to join West Virginia and Mississippi, that has such a lower standard of protecting individuals' rights, you know, where is this state headed to?
Representative, I'm going to bring in Mick Balduck just to get his thoughts right now. As I mentioned before, Mick is an epidemiologist and the vaccine coordinator for the Connecticut Immunization Program. Mick, you've heard what the representative has to say. What are your thoughts?
Well, Ron, as I mentioned before, you know, the religious exemption is really, it's up to the legislature to determine where they're going to go with that. Our job as a Department of Public Health is really the public health of everyone. And so our goal is to make sure that everyone is kept healthy, and our job specifically with the immunization program is to try and get as many people vaccinated, because the more people that are vaccinated, the more people that are protected.
Representative, we've been talking a lot about religious beliefs for parents not getting their children vaccinated. If and here's my question for you, and I thought a lot about this. If a vaccination prevents one of God's children from getting sick, isn't that a good thing? Because then life is being preserved, and then that child can grow up and do God's will.
So I just go back to my original statement that none of these vaccines have received double-blind placebo tests. For instance, the HPV vaccine has never definitively proven that it prevents cancer. It has proven that it can help to prevent lesions that over a period of time, like 30 or 40 years, may turn into cancer. But the HPV vaccine has injured people. It's documented with the Federal Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, VARS. So there's documentation that vaccines do harm within this program. And it's also documented that it's never been proven through double-blind placebos, the golden standard.
Is this religious exemption that we're speaking about, is it being exploited, if I could use that word, by parents who don't really have a religious objection, but look, they don't want to get their children vaccinated?
Well, I see this as like walking the plank. You know, you only have so far to go, and you're you know, drowning. Unfortunately, this state and you know all the states in the Connecticut, due to the marketing and the lobbying of the pharmaceutical companies, are forcing parents to deny them the right for choice. So, you know, I'm not going to argue with you on these very fine legal points, but I must say that in order to, you know, have this question of not fulfilling the standard of a formal religion, I don't really know why we're going there. Do you have to be a card-carrying Catholic or Jewish person or whatever to be religious? I really don't think so. I think that we're in a new time and age in which more people are thinking for themselves and not, you know, in kind of a herd mentality, you know, following the leader. People are making decisions. People are becoming more educated. And, you know, for me, I believe that, you know, preserving one's health, you know, recognizing that the body is a gift from God, that we have an obligation to protect and to maintain, especially when it comes to our children.
So if I could read into it a little bit, it almost sounds as if you're saying, you know what, you don't need a religious exemption. If you believe that this is bad for your child, you should have the right not to do it. Would that be correct?
I can't speak for the people that have this religious exemption. everyone is an individual, and I'm sure that this is an extremely viable exemption for the people that have it.
We have an email, and Mick, I'd like to get you to respond to this. Lauren emails us, "The problem I have with vaccines has nothing to do with measles per se. The fact is, the amount of vaccines administered to babies and young children have increased demonstratively since the 80s. Every vaccine is accepted out of hand by doctors and the public without thinking about the ramifications of it on a tiny body. Plus, the efficacy of many of them seems questionable, especially chickenpox or the flu." What do you think about that, Mick?
Well, we get that question a lot. And, you know, the parents, if parents do have concerns, they should speak to their pediatrician or their family practitioner about those. Again, these vaccines are tested. They are rigorously tested, and they are studied. And these are approved by the American Academy of Pediatrics. The schedule is approved by the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Academy of Family Physicians and the United States Public Health Service. And the schedule is approved each and every year. And, yes, it may seem like a lot, but there's a reason why that schedule is approved, because these doses need to be given and the number of shots need to be given at the specific scheduled time to protect the child, to give the maximum amount of protection to that child.
Representative Hennessey, when you hear Mick saying, look, they are rigorously tested, what's your reaction?
Well, I'm just kind of, you know, this whole question is kind of like a religious rites thing, that if you question the efficacy of vaccines, you're somehow creating heresy. You know, the fact of the matter is these have not received, you know, for the third time, have not received the double-blind standard testing. I also want to thank you for voicing that email, because by the age of five, children have received 50 vaccinations, by the age of 18, over 70. And the amount of highly questionable elements, aluminum, mercury, not to mention the pathogens, aborted fetus material, which, when people realize this, may have a serious concern about injecting it. And I just want to throw it out there that since this, like when I was a child, there was three vaccines, and then now there's all these others. And, you know, something that we're completely ignoring, besides the standard of testing of vaccines, is the incidence of autism that's coming up. As the increase in the schedule of vaccines increased, it autism increased proportionally. And in the 60s, there were not autistic children. There were not children needing to wear helmets, have tics, and no eye contact, no opportunity for speaking.
Representative, I only have 1 minute left, and I'm sorry I'm sorry I left this till the end. I just have one last question. In your press release, you wrote, "Mandating vaccination violates the standards of informed consent, a fundamental human right established under the Nuremberg Code of Medical Ethics." Why did you cite that?
Yes. So that's like right in the beginning of the Nuremberg Code, that the individual rights are not superseded by the group, which is what happened in Nazi Germany.
So, and just to clarify, you felt that this was appropriate for an analogy to the vaccines in Connecticut?
What I've been saying is that these vaccines have not been adequately tested, and they're being tested on our children to their detriment. And I believe that that is a complete violation of the Nuremberg Code.
Representative Hennessey, I appreciate you coming on today, sir.
I appreciate you asking me.
And please come back in the future.
Thank you, Ron.
Jack Hennessy is the deputy speaker for the Connecticut House. He's a Democrat from Bridgeport. Mick Baldock, it's always a pleasure to speak with you, Mick, and I always appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ron. My pleasure.
Mick is an epidemiologist and vaccine coordinator for the Connecticut Immunization Program. If you would like to join in the conversation today, the emails are open. We have a number of them, tfs@wshu.org. You can also reach us on Twitter. We're at Full Story WSHU. And there's always the voicemail. Not too many people call, but you know what? If you want to, please do. 833-CALL-TFS. That number is 833-225-5837. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. It's the Full Story on WSHU. As a reminder, we welcome all your comments. Email us at tfs@wshu.org. Our Twitter page is Full Story WSHU, and you can leave us a message on Facebook at The Full Story. We continue with our discussions about vaccinations and the measles, and to a certain extent, the flu, even though we really haven't talked about it today. Three guests are joining us for the final segment. One we're going to start with is Melody Butler, who's the founder and executive director of Nurses Who Vaccinate. Melody, you've been with us before, and we appreciate you coming back. How are you?
Thank you for having me once again. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Did you have a chance to listen to the previous conversation that we had with Representative Hennessy?
I did not, but I'm willing to address any questions and concerns that may have arisen from the conversation.
Okay. Basically, he's saying, look, more testing needs to be done. Don't rush into this. Take your time.
So obviously, there is medical healthcare professionals, we encourage testing, and we look forward to studies and clinical trials. And it's an ongoing, worldwide research that's being done on vaccinations, not just the MMR, but flu vaccines. And thank goodness, because with all this research, we're on the cusp of maybe having a possible prevention for, other cancers other than HPV. We're hoping to have RSV vaccine coming to the front line soon. Well, looking into CMV, which is a disease that can cause congenital disabilities and infants. We're looking for a vaccine for that. So as a nurse myself, I'm really excited for all the research that is being done for vaccines, and they are extensively studied. And the trials that are done are, it's across the world. So I'm really excited what the potential is in the upcoming years.
One of the things that he said that I took note of, and I don't know how old he is, but I'm assuming he and I are probably about the same age. And he said, look, when we were kids, a lot of us got the measles and we got others, other things. And you know what? We survived. We did all right without getting all these shots. Why do we need these shots now?
So here's the thing. I know people who have had measles and survived. I also know people who have lost their children to vaccine-preventable diseases. They're the ones who are not here. They're the ones who we're speaking for now, the healthcare providers, because we see the devastation that happens when we don't vaccinate. Can people survive measles? Of course. But you're going to have that, those deaths that are going to occur. You're going to have the lifelong complications. You're going to have children who go deaf, who go blind, who have encephalitis, who have permanent brain damage from the disease itself. The MMR vaccine is incredibly safe, and it's given in millions of doses around the world. And we have evidence that shows that not only is it really effective at preventing measles, but it also helps us stay safe later on. Measles is actually very dangerous in the sense where it wipes out your immune system for a couple of years after you contracted the disease. Now, if you subject your child to catching measles on purpose, looking for that quote-unquote natural immunity, you're not giving them any favors. You're leaving them more predisposed to catch other diseases, and you're leaving them weaker to fight off something maybe they would have been able to fight off of had they had the MMR shot.
Can I read to you something from the press release that the representative put out? I'd like to get your reaction to it. Okay. He wrote, at least, or maybe his press aide wrote, mandating vaccination violates the standards of informed consent, a fundamental human right established under the Nuremberg Code on Medical Ethics.
Okay, so that's a really interesting take, but I would like to say he is very incorrect. When we're mandating vaccines, we're not forcing anyone to get it. we're basically letting them know that, hey, if you want to participate in public schools and certain things that are, you know, involve privilege, you need to abide by our public health laws. They're here for a reason. If we didn't have everyone wearing seatbelts and, you know, stopping every light, we would have mayhem in the streets. You know, it's your right not to wear a seatbelt, but you're going to have the consequences that follow that. You won't have, you know, the ability to drive safely. You know, we mandate many other things. We don't force people to do it. We just, you know, we highly encourage it. And if you don't participate in these safe regulations, then you don't have the privilege of taking part in public schools or, you know, getting access to public events and activities. You know, no one's forcing anyone to get the vaccine. We're just, you know, it's a relationship. They're saying, if you want to participate in public schools, we have to protect everyone in the school, especially those who are vulnerable and susceptible to these complications from disease.
Melody, I'm going to ask you to hold on for 1 second because I would like to bring in two more guests. Dr. Anthony Santella is Associate Professor of Public Health at Hofstra University School of Health Professions and Human Services. And Dr. Lauren Allison is a pediatrician with Willow's Pediatrics Group in Westport. Welcome both. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
At one of the rallies recently, I believe it was in Hartford at the state capitol, some of the protesters held up signs. And if I could read to you some of what was written on the signs, they read, "Facts, not fear. Stop medical tyranny and do no harm first." Dr. Santella, how do you respond?
Well, I think part of the public health issue that's happening here is people are confused. You know, they see one thing on the news, they hear other things from the provider, they see public officials saying other things, and that generally drives people to do nothing when they think, well, there's not enough science here for me to take action because I'm hearing different messages from different people. And so I think that's causing a lot of this vaccine hesitation. But, you know, the CDC has made a really good analogy to try to encourage parents to increase uptake of the vaccine. And it's like comparing the vaccine to like a bike helmet for a kid. You know, you get them, you put the bike helmet on before, you know, to get them used to it before they, you know, have to get in a car or on a bike so they're comfortable with it. And then you don't put on the helmet or the seatbelt or the car seat halfway through the ride. It happens before. And so the same thing applies with vaccinations. You know, in order to keep children particularly, you know, free from disease, you know, we want them to have the vaccine according to the vaccine schedule, which has been trialed and tested and proven effective. We don't want delays in getting the vaccine because that can also cause consequences, as you heard earlier. Mm-hmm. And we want the kids particularly to be vaccinated before they're exposed to the disease, not after, right? It's like putting on the helmet after someone's had an accident already. So I think all this kind of outrage and misinformation is just really driving people to not do anything. And that's probably the worst thing that we can do when we know that the science shows that the vaccine works.
Dr. Allison?
Yes, Ron. Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Very well.
We've had, just so you know, we've had a number of complaints on Twitter and emails from those who are, quite frankly, they're angry that we had Representative Hennessy on the program today. What do you think? Is it misinformation? I mean, how do we get the message out?
I think that's a reasonable backlash, and I had similar thoughts myself listening to him over the past couple minutes. Because Representative Hennessy is not a doctor. He doesn't have any medical training. He's choosing to read information. And just like the professor said, he's confused too because he's getting information from sources of varying degrees of validity. So I would encourage parents to talk to their pediatrician. If you hear something confusing, you read something on the internet, and you think that it questions your beliefs, talk to us. We're here to protect your kids, protect the community, and so we want to lead you in the right direction. I think it's understandable for you to have Representative Hennessy on and give voice to that, and then to have trained medical professionals on to try and counter some of those arguments in order to help people understand the truth and to have people hear directly from our mouths, from, you know, our you know, more informed mouths with the correct information, exactly what we'd recommend. And we can take down, you know, each of his arguments point by point. And I think that's good for people to hear.
Dr. Allison, you saw, I'm sure you saw the report from the Department of Public Health the other week. Mm-hmm. Did it shock you that there are so many who do not get their children vaccinated?
It is shocking. I saw the report from the Department of Public Health of vaccination rates in our public schools, and then they revised the report with some more information, and I think it's still surprising how high the rates are. Some of the schools in the area where I serve are as high as 6%, with less than 1% typically being medical exemptions, and then the rest of that nearly 5% sometimes being religious exemptions. It does surprise me. Because I encourage all my patients to vaccinate, and usually we have a good discussion about it, and they end up accepting the MMR vaccine prior to kindergarten.
So, doctor, could I jump in 1 second? So you said only 1%, I believe, you said were religious exemptions. When you speak with the parents, what are their reasons? Mm-hmm. Why aren't they doing this?
1% was medical exemptions.
I'm sorry, 1% was medical?
5% in some of the instances was religious. Overwhelmingly, they're religious exemptions.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And their religious exemptions are based on what?
Typically, it's more of a personal belief. Most people aren't being, directed to do this and can't cite a particular religious belief, but it's more that they personally, much like Representative Hennessy, personally think that vaccines aren't right, or they want to have control over when they're given, or they want to delay the vaccines, or they've read certain things. Such as the link to autism, which has repeatedly been proven to be incorrect. Those are some of the reasons we hear.
Melody, you've been very patient with us. I'd like to get your thoughts.
So this is very common when I'm caring for patients and they get questions and concerns from nurses, people coming to nurses to vaccinate. They see a representative, they see a legislator coming out with these claims and these stories. And just like everyone else has done on the phone, it is so important that parents go to reputable sites and go to someone who's been trained and has that background to address these points. Have that one-on-one conversation. I'm doing this. I'm on the phone with you today. I'm taking a part of my day to make sure everyone's educated. I'm not getting paid to do this. I am doing this because I know what happens if we don't vaccinate. I've taken care of kids who have died in the PICUs, due to preventable diseases. And I've taken care of kids who have died of things, that aren't related to diseases. But I'm here because I want to make sure that I can prevent the deaths that are preventable. And we can only do that if we take advantage of the technology that's out there. Vaccines are safe. And they are effective, but they only work if we use them. And I cannot plead harder. As a mother of four, my kids are up to date with their vaccines. I am up to date myself with everything I can possibly get here in the United States, to protect myself and when I travel and whatnot. We are so lucky to have access to these vaccines. I work with the United Nations Foundation campaign, Shot at Life. And by helping them, we provide vaccines to children overseas. And over there are parents walking 5 to 10 miles just to get the measles vaccine, just to get the pneumococcal vaccine, because they know if they don't take advantage of that pop-up clinic there in that village that day, they're not going to have another chance for maybe another couple months, and by then it may be too late. They've already lost one of their children to these vaccine-borne diseases, and they're not going to let that happen again. Meanwhile, here in America, we're delaying vaccines, not because we can't walk 10 miles, but because we're afraid of something someone told us that isn't even true. And it's heartbreaking to know that eventually, if no one starts listening to us on the phone, here the healthcare workers, the professors and the doctors and the nurses pleading, we're going to see the deaths that we see in Madagascar and the deaths that we've seen in Ukraine, they're going to start happening here in the U.S. And I hate to be the one who said, I told you so, but it's going to end up happening if we don't get our act together and people stop listening to the misinformation and start going to reputable sources.
Dr. Santella, should religious exemptions be removed?
From a public health perspective, I think people should have a choice when it comes to everything that we do in public health is generally, in most cases, voluntary, which is why I think the pleas that you hear from the medical professionals, the public health officials, the community advocates, why everyone's trying to, tell their story so that people can hear, what the science and evidence tells us. But I think at the end of the day, people do have a choice. Now, what makes measles a little more complicated is, you know, public health is about keeping communities of people free from injury, disability, and death. And generally, our individual behavior helps or hurts that. But with something like measles, where people may be contagious in days before they develop the rash, or that the measles virus is active in air or on surfaces for a couple of hours after someone leaves an area, that means individuals are putting others at risk, whether it's kids in the school, people in public facilities, airports, et cetera. And so with something like measles, which is a little more trickier than some other viral infections, yes, someone's individual behavior can hurt a lot of people. And so my personal opinion is it should be mandatory, it should be required, and there really shouldn't be any exemptions, except obviously if there are medical reasons that would prevent someone from getting it.
Dr. Allison, religious exemptions removed?
I absolutely agree. I think removing the religious exemption and only allowing for medical exemption is going to benefit the public greatly. We need herd immunity in our schools in order to prevent outbreaks. And when some of these schools are listed at less than 95% immunity, that's the standard at which we say they no longer have herd immunity to protect one another from outbreak situations. And we're trying to protect kids who can't get vaccinated for other reasons, people who are immunocompromised. And it's just... It's their right to go to school. It's a public right to go to school. And your personal beliefs that are, not medically backed, not scientifically proven, should not prevent other people from going to school or allow them to get sick at school if they can't be vaccinated. So absolutely, please, I agree. We should remove religious exemptions.
We have about a minute and a half left. I'd like to give each of you a chance to make some final statements. Melody Butler, you first, please.
Sure. I would really encourage people to use the resources we have available. And if those who are listening right now are very passionate about this, just like the healthcare professionals, but you're not in the health field, don't feel you are voiceless. We need parents, we need science advocates to be out there, encouraging others to get vaccinated and encouraging people to read evidence-based research. Organizations that Nurses Who Vaccinate works with, such as Voice of Her Vaccines, Vaccinate Your Baby, and Shot at Life, they are great places for people to go to get regular people information. Not everyone can decipher the research and the studies and understand what makes a good study better than one another, but there are organizations, that work with the CDC to take their information and break it down into easy-to-read, simple terms. So I really highly recommend that people check out, if you want to become a vaccine advocate, go to Voices for Vaccines, which is a parent-driven organization to help parents, get out there and get the word out. Vaccinate Your Baby, if you're looking for
Melody, I'm going to hold you there because I'm almost out of time and I need to get final thoughts from Dr. Santel and Dr. Allison. Dr. Santel, please.
Thank you.
I would say just remember the basics. Measles is a highly contagious virus, and we're fortunate to have a safe and effective vaccine that can prevent it. That's the bottom line.
And Dr. Allison, you get the final word.
Absolutely. Call your pediatrician and talk to them about the measles vaccine if you have any questions. Otherwise, we recommend you get it around 12 to 15 months, and then again at age 4 to 5 before kindergarten.
Dr. Lauren Allison, pediatrician with Willows Pediatrics Group in Westport. Dr. Anthony Santella, associate professor of public health at Hofstra University School of Health Professions and Human Services. And Melody Butler, founder and executive director of Nurses Who Vaccinate. Thank you all. I appreciate you coming back on the air with us today.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. That's it today. Joelle Schrock is our engineer. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari. J.D. Allen is the producer. Ann Lopez is the senior producer. And Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.